I'm sure, having heard what I said this morning, you will never watch the television the same ever again. Because the worldview is so massive, it is coming in absolutely everywhere. And especially is promoted by Hollywood, that controls the television. So I want you, somebody asked me how to pray for me. I believe this message has to get out to this rising generation. Otherwise, we'll lose it. Because it is so bombarded by the forces that control our world. And it is so intimidated, in another sense, by the threats to the Christian worldview, that if these kids don't understand the fundamental basis of why they're Christians and why these other people are operating the way they do, then I'm afraid their mouths will be closed and eventually they will stop believing. So I feel a great call to take this message to this rising generation. And my little ministry feels this as our particular demographic. And I just want to engage all of us as older folks to see that important ministry that we older folks can have to the right generation, if you like, to bring the truth of the gospel in perhaps a new way. So please pray for us. We're at a difficult time in our ministry, in terms, as everyone is, of course. And if the Lord lays it on your heart to get in touch with us and help us, then please make this a subject of prayer. So, well, for the subject of today, so that you get a hold of this oneness system and how it is so powerful. I was talking earlier about its negative side in its programmatic intention to undermine and eliminate the binary or twoism, but now it has a positive goal, which is to retrain people to think in a oneist way. And it can be quite seductive. Right at this moment, of course, we find ourselves, like we've never done before, in a struggle of worldview. I was talking to a gentleman, and he said, 15 years ago, I didn't know what worldview was. A fine Christian man. And of course, the reason is, we didn't have to think about worldview in a world that just automatically thought in twoist terms. But if that historian Genovese is right, and there's been this dramatic change, then the conflicts we see all of a sudden raise the issue of how do you think fundamentally about the whole of reality. And as the Apostle Paul says, there are only two ways. And inevitably, you see, the television and Hollywood and all these leaders and everything else will have to think in one of those two ways. And they're all pretty much attuned now to a oneist way. And that's why we feel that there's some kind of blur, because things are not as clear as they could be because of this vast debate. And I want to show you as clear as I can what are the presuppositions behind this new spirituality, the 5 points of oneism. We can have two reactions to our cultural meltdown. Consternation on the one hand, oh dear, what's happening? Aren't things terrible? And then nostalgia. Can we not rediscover the America of the 50s? Believe me, that message doesn't go over with young people. They weren't even born in the 50s. Why would they want to go back to the 50s? And so I think those two reactions are not appropriate. We tend to think in terms of tradition, that America belongs to Christians. It used to, but it's not a divine right. And so, on the other side, some of us are being intimidated to compromise and to capitulate, and especially for our young people. They're not tempted by the nostalgia. They're certainly tempted, though, by the compromise, because the intimidation factor on them, wherever they are, and many of them are in colleges and so on, is absolutely enormous. It's not like what you folks, what we knew when we were in school. And we send our kids off, you see, having given them training and Bible schools and even homeschooling. And they go to college and they receive this bombardment of another worldview that really makes them most uneasy at best, and indeed intimidated and reduced to silence at worst. So those are the two reactions that we can have. And of course, we all know that the note that was sounded at the political level and pretty much everywhere else really is the notion of change. Change is the solution. There are problems for our rising generation that we maybe didn't have to deal with in quite the same way, indicating the need for them to have a clear understanding of these basic issues. You see, once you understand that there are two worldviews, then the notions of tolerance and intolerance, the way people now talk about them, disappears. These are two worldviews, and they are, in a certain sense, both of them, if they are worth anything, believe what they say, and they will be intolerant of the other side. But that's another question. But the point is that we see this confrontation now of worldviews, and the other side is telling the Christians that they are intolerant. And our kids in colleges and universities and at work and so on are intimidated because it sounds right. We must be intolerant because we believe in Christian uniqueness. How can you believe that Christianity is the only way when you have all these different religions? Even more to the point, how can you believe that heterosexual monogamy is the only way when we have all these different kinds of sexualities coming at us now? Why should we be confined to this particular viewpoint? And so our kids find ourselves in an all-is-one culture. And the imperious necessity of oneism, can't we all get along? Now, often the older generation blurts out, the Bible says it, you must believe it. But you know, more and more, that doesn't work for the rising generation, even Christian kids. Because they want to know why the Bible says it. And we have a responsibility to tell them why, not simply cite verses at them. So we live in a world of all is oneism, of synthesis. There's a bumper sticker. I guess you've even seen it in Cedar Falls. I don't know. You certainly see it everywhere in California. Coexist. There's a new seminary somewhere. It was a Protestant seminary, and it decided to solve its financial and other problems by becoming an interfaith seminary. And so the watchword of this seminary, which was a Christian seminary, is never instead of, always in addition to. And so you have all these different religions. So this seminary will be producing gurus, Christian ministers, rabbis, imams, and whatever. That's the new look. The other problem is homosexuality. If Christian uniqueness is one problem, this one has arisen right on top of the list too. Is this a question of the image of God or just one more sexual expression which we must tolerate? The rising generation, 75%, believe homosexuality is a valid lifestyle. I wonder where they got that from. This is part of the worldview in which they have been indoctrinated. The old generation says God hates fags. The problems are related. Interfaith will produce intersex. Polytheism will produce polysexuality. All religions will produce all gender, or omnigender, as it's sometimes called. I don't think I have time to show you why these connections are true, but just believe me, as soon as you start getting into interfaith and all the religions as one, you will get into all sexuality is fine as well. There is a coherence here. Here's the realistic situation of our faith in America today. My friend James Herrick wrote a book in 2000, The Making of the New Spirituality. You know, when you write titles for the general population, you try to be as inoffensive as possible and use code words. So he talked about the new spirituality, and then he talks about the Western religious tradition, which of course is Christianity. But the important thing I want you to see is, and he's a fine Christian man, the subtitle is The Eclipse of the Western Religious Tradition, The Eclipse of the Christian Faith. And so, with this intimidation, we see campus ministries and various parts of the church intimidated into silence or making it a virtue. We hear about creeds, not deeds. Avoid hot-button issues. Get involved in socioeconomic and environmental issues, and the culture will like you. Whereas if you talk about these more difficult problems, then the culture will reject you. And so what do many in the rising generation of Christians do? Well, they get into deeds, not creeds. And I think that's the death of the church. We mustn't give offense. We mustn't be unpopular. We're Jesus followers, not Christians. We must get the culture to like us. We'll reinvent the gospel in terms of a non-offensive gospel that is affirmative and talks about human flourishing, but will not talk about sin. But of course, we're losing our voice. The new gospel has to do with mysticism, social justice, and produces incredible naivete as to what is really happening in the culture. There's a failure to understand where this present culture came from. And it really came from cultural powers and thinkers whose intention was, in the early part of the 20th century, I could tell you a lot about that, but there isn't time, to actually produce the culture that we're seeing now. Thoroughly anti-Christian thinkers and power brokers that wanted to produce this culture. And now, young Christian leaders are wanting this culture to affirm us. They want this culture to like us. When the very intention of the architects of this culture was to destroy the Christian faith. You see, there's a lot of ignorance goes on today in this rising generation of what the issues really are. Do you remember I used the phrase that we all see now being employed? I'm spiritual, not religious. I think that you really need to see that that's a way of rejecting the Christian religion and adopting a whole brand new form of spirituality. Now, what is that spirituality that is being proposed, you see, as superior to religion? And you can always sort of describe religion in morbid and black terms. We don't want that anymore. But here's this fresh new spirituality. I've got to tell you something, folks. This isn't new at all. This is as old as the hills. When I tell young students this, their eyes pop wide open because they've been told that this is all new, that it's all change, and it's futuristic looking. And I tell them, no, we're in the process of looking at two spiritualities as old as the hills, not the new future and the old traditional past. This is a message that they love to hear when you can show it to them clearly. And this is the essence of this spirituality that is being proposed. Here are the points. Five of them. I managed to put one in every one of them so you can follow. Why do we have a picture of the labyrinth? This is in Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. And in some evangelical churches, even, you have now the employment of this labyrinth. I'm going to situate my remarks around the notion of a circle. And this is a circle. But the meaning of it is very interesting. The promoter of it is a woman by the name of Lauren Artress, who's a so-called priest in this Episcopalian cathedral in San Francisco. And she states about the labyrinth that it is a mandala, a Hindu occult meditation process. True meditation occurs when the physical brain has been pacified, kept busy with a mantra, that's a sort of a saying that you keep repeating. So the spiritual mind is then free to wander on its own and discover new truths. And here's this woman, Lauren Artress, walking a sacred path. And here's what she says. She's supposed to be a Christian minister. The labyrinth is a large, complex spiral circle, which is an ancient symbol for the divine mother, the God within, the goddess, the holy in all creation. And notice what is being passed off here as the Christian faith. It's incredible. It's the ancient pagan notion of nature as divine, and of the goddess, Mother Nature, as the personification of divine nature. And the notion that divine nature means that all of us are divine because we're part of nature, and so the divine is within us. And so the goal of spirituality, as you circle around this labyrinth, is to discover God within you. That's being passed off as Christian spirituality in some places. So here are the 5 points around a circle. That's a Wiccan symbol of earth, fire, or what are the 5 elements? Air, earth, fire, water, and spirit. And I just thought it was interesting that the Wiccans understand both a circle and 5 points. It's got nothing to do with my lecture, by the way. Except that my lecture is about this. The 5 points of the iron pentacle. Here it is, the first point. All is one and one is all. It's useful to see this in a circle because really that's what it is. It is the attempt to put your arms around everything and make a statement about everything as part of a whole which is fundamentally united, where everything is the same. And in that circle, you see, you can be very spiritual. So in the circle is rocks and trees and human beings and God. So that's why some of these folks of the past, you know, would hug trees, because trees are part of nature and so they're divine. That's a serious business for those people who believe it. So you, in a way, you shouldn't mock them as being stupid. They're merely putting into practice what they deeply believe. Some of you have seen the word mandala, which is also a circle. It means circle in Sanskrit, and it conveys the impression of wholeness, peace, healing. You see how seductive this notion is. In our world of conflict, we now have a hope of bringing everybody together in a world of oneism that will solve all our problems. There are all kinds of circles. This is an interesting one. Has anyone ever seen this? It is the symbol of the Falun Gong, a Buddhist sect in mainland China that the Communist Party is trying to wipe out. That's a truly secular system, and it's trying to wipe out a spiritual system. That's a story in itself, and I won't allow myself to get into that one. Never happened before. I should try this every time I speak, just this one slide. But you see how it's easy to hear that wash over you and not see that it is actually the most apostate pagan affirmation that you could ever find. It's the end of the Christian faith, and it's the opening of one's arms to this ancient pagan oneism. Now, the second point, all humanity is one. When I give this lecture, it's often just before lunch. And I can't help thinking, when I look at this slide, of a pizza. And then those lovely little Italian sausages, you know. And actually, that's not a bad image, you see, because when we get to all is one in religion, you'll see how that works very well. So I better wait till I get to that slide. But I hope you can withhold your hunger pangs a little longer as I go through this. So this circle is full of little circles. Now the little circles, you see, are human beings. And according to this way of thinking, it makes sense. If the large circle is divine, nature is divine, then every circle within it is also divine. So as the specialists say, the macrocosm, the big cosmos, is found in the microcosm, the tiny cosmos of the human being. So that's how the world is put together in this system, that each human being, you see, is a carrier of the truth that you see in the whole picture. And because that's the case, it is argued, we can bring all humanity together. This is a very powerful spiritual idea that politicians love. Geopoliticians go nuts thinking about this. They want to bring the world together, and here we have a principle, you see, that can make it happen. And really, this is an expression of that so-called truth. Harold Bloom is professor of Shakespeare at Yale, raised in a Jewish home, but became a pagan spiritualist. And this is what he says. He came to understand, and it was a massive change in his mind, as you can imagine, being raised on Genesis 1:1. I am uncreated, as old as God. Uncreated, as old as God. See what he's doing? He is giving to himself the attributes that really only belong to God. As we said before, in the biblical view, you have God and nothing else. And from God's determination, creation comes about from nothing. This man has jumped that barrier and sees himself with the attributes of God. That's also done by the Christian mystic Meister Eckhart that lots of evangelicals like to cite, where he says there is something in the soul that is uncreated and uncreatable. No, there's nothing that is uncreated in creation. Only God is uncreated. I think this is an important point that you need to hold on to. So, all these notions, you see, that I won't necessarily go through, are inspired by this particular vision of humanity. And here are a number of very powerful spiritual movements. And you know, you could give a 15-minute lecture on every one of them. So I'm obviously going to not do that. Just take a look at them as they have been presenting themselves to us in recent times. All these movements affirm this view of humanity. Of course, Oprah Winfrey is right on top of it. And some of you may have seen her webinar with Eckhart Tolle proposing this vision, this new vision that will transform us all. And this worldly utopia will, it is claimed, bring an end to human depression and egotism, religious fear and conflict, the conflicts between nations, solutions to the ecological crisis, and produce the transformation of human consciousness. Who could not be for this? This is slam dunk, right? This is all we need, is this transformative new vision of the way things are. Ah, here's the pizza again, cut into bite-sized slices, which is the way many people think of religion, right? There's religious truth, and then each religion has a piece of the pie. And as a matter of fact, you can go further with this image, according to which religions on the outside have this hard crust, tough to get through. But in the middle is the nice ooey-gooey cheese. Because all religions share the same goal of union with the divine. Basically, of a sort of confusion of the divine with the human at the center of this search for the divine. And it's claimed, you see, that at the end of the day, while religions seem different, they're all the same. And that's why you have this particular slide to show that. And this kind of thinking is as old as the hills. Here's a 12th century Sufi master. Sufism is mystical Islam. It's quite lyrical, so I'll read it to you. My soul is a mosque for Muslims, a temple for Hindus, an altar for Zoroastrians, a church for Christians, a synagogue for Jews, and a pasture for gazelles. See, this is the Al Gore of the Middle Ages. You know, this particular notion of thinking about religion, again, is as old as the hills. When Paul goes to Athens, what does he see? He sees a whole series of altars of all the different religions available in the ancient world. They weren't fighting with one another. They were all sitting there selling their books, like I was. I'm sorry about those books, by the way. I should have brought 14 cases. They were not fighting. And Paul recognizes here what's true about the ancient world, that it was a massive interfaith structure, the Roman Empire. And so there's nothing new about interfaith either. And the fact that the gospel comes into that world with a distinctive and radically different message as it does today, therefore, should not confuse us. It should encourage us to think that that's the way things always will be. And here's what a Buddhist says, that really we will all get together in the area of personal religious awakening. This search for spirituality will bring us all together. So be careful, you see, when you see some Christian leaders saying that the important thing is the experience. This is true about all pagan religions. It's based on experience. The Christian religion is radically different because it's not based on your experience. You know what it's based on? An act of God in history. That's what it is. The gospel is an account of something God did at a particular time in history. Other religions have nothing like that to talk about. And so they major on this development of experiential spirituality. And we have to fight to keep the truth of what the Christian gospel is. Now, that we will have experiences from that is another issue. So don't think that I'm against religious experience. But it's just we have to be careful to not simply talk about Christianity in that same way. We are entering a new age decisive for humanity, discovering a universal religious identity. This is a Roman Catholic monk. And indeed, there are so many people now that think this is the way forward. And there are all these organizations with millions of dollars behind them promoting interfaith religion. I must stop for a moment and tell you, what time should I end? 12. Then I won't stop and tell you. You cut me off, and so I'll cut you off. I did actually attend the Parliament of the World's Religions in Chicago in 1993 and saw 125 different religions in the big ballroom at the Palmer House in Chicago. 8,000 delegates linked their arms and they danced around that massive ballroom affirming their spiritual and religious unity. This is not just an idea. This is being pursued with tremendous intelligence and enthusiasm. There's one problem, say the oneists, because they look around and they say, all is one and one is all. And yet, we have lots of problems. How is that? This is a big problem for this system. Because if it's true that all is one and one is all, and the way things are now, right, are the way they should always be. But they have found a way of getting around that fundamental contradiction in their ideas. There is a problem, but it's not sin. The heart of humanity is sound. The problem is that we make distinctions, that we're still in the world of illusion, as the Hindus say, and we take reality as what things really are, and we will distinguish between me and the piano. But if you really get down to it, I can just blend with that piano, and really there is no distinction at all. So if you really want to break down this problem of the world being divided and conflict and so on, you will have to get rid of these notions of distinction. And I have a whole list of them here, and I obviously won't have time to go through them, so I'll just put them up, and you can take a deep breath and read fast. But here they are. You see, all these things which are essential to the Christian faith are identified as the problem that must be eliminated. As I was saying earlier this morning, getting rid of the binary is number one on the agenda, really. So all those elements must go. And as they go forward, you can see that it comes down to our practical living with families, parents and children, male and female distinction, monogamy and polygamy. That's coming, by the way, as we redefine marriage. We'll soon be redefining marriage to include polygamy and polyamory, which is four or five people living in a consensual sexual relationship. And they will be demanding recognition of their particular arrangement as a marriage in the days ahead. don't make any mistake about that. Homosexuality and heterosexuality. There's one solution. Well, where would the solution be, would you say? If you remember that big circle with all the little circles in it, the solution will jump to mind, that the solution is to be found within the circle, but within the little circle, since you are the carrier of this divine reality, then to solve the problem, you go within, because you're an expression of the whole. You go within yourself, you see. So the solution to our world's problems is to be able to create human beings who are able to get in touch with their higher spiritual selves. Hence, all this emphasis upon yoga and mysticism of various kinds. Destroying the mind, practicing yoga, are some of those things. Listen to feelings. Saying mantras. It's interesting, the word mantra, which is a word or two being repeated in Sanskrit, comes from two words, man, to think, and tra, to be liberated from. So the goal is to stop thinking. I sometimes say when there are young people in the group, you should try this on your parents or your teachers. I didn't do my homework because the highest form of myself is not thinking. The solution, interestingly enough, is the joining of the opposites. In other words, the total relativization of distinctions, bringing them together and transcending them so that you're no longer bothered by distinctions like male and female, truth and falsehood, right and wrong, and so on. So the great goal of this mystical approach that will save our world and produce a utopia is the elimination of distinctions. And the best way of doing that, of course, is in an altered state of consciousness where you leave your rational body and you are in this virtual world of an experience of unity with everything. And it is a virtual state in which people can get. But that, they say, is the truth about who we really are. So the joining of the opposites. And there's that word. Now, if you were writing it down earlier, that's how you spell it, Advaita. The solution, you see, is to go within and get into this altered state of consciousness where there is no such thing as thinking and where Advaita rules, namely, not to. And so the goal is to produce this kind of mindset in people who will then make the world sort of cohere with this virtual experience. And they have an eschatology. They're awaiting the second coming of the goddess, the Sophianic millennium, the era of goddess blessing and worship when all peoples and faiths will be united around the divine feminine. You're not going to see any of this part of my lecture, unfortunately, but there are two kinds of religion. That's what that says. I want to throw a couple of words at you, though. If I said there's only oneism and twoism, there are two cosmologies, two worldviews, a homo cosmology and a hetero cosmology. A cosmology based on sameness, which is oneism, and a hetero cosmology, which is based on difference. So there's another word for your brain to work with. All is two means we draw two circles. We have two circles, not one. We believe in creation. We believe that God intended creation. But we have to draw a second circle, the circle of God. And that's what makes the difference, you see. So There are only two ways of conceiving of the world, either one circle or two circles. And that's where you can think, you see, about this accusation that you are intolerant. Because you must turn the argument around and say, you are intolerant of me because I see two circles and you only see one. So we can turn the argument that we are intolerant against those who throw that accusation against us. Oh dear, you're not going to see this. This is the essence of twoism, but I will try and do some of that tomorrow. And here's my last slide. Two circles, the Creator and the creature. And the good news is they're brought together in the reconciling work of Jesus on the cross. Thank you.
Could probably go on a little longer. Actually, I don't think anybody's going to want to go out right now. That be all right? If you have to, you know, if you need to leave, that's fine. But if you'd like to, I think everybody's just feeding right now. It's up to you. Before we let's do. Okay, he'll get into it more tomorrow. It is. We are getting a wonderful shower of blessing.